May it please the court.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, I'm Ashley Parrish on behalf of the petitioners. As we see it, I'd like to reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. As we see it, this case presents the following question. When the Commission has made a determination as to how much of a generator's total output is available for sale and resale and transmission, is that determination, which is based on the idea that that energy, some of the energy, has not been used to supply the generator's own station power requirements, is that determination preclusive of the state's separate determination in terms of allocating power for purposes of regulating retail sales?
I don't understand that the Commission has done what you said it did.
Well, Your Honor, our position is that when a commission has to make a determination as to setting a netting interval, what that netting interval does is it tells the generator and everybody else that there is so much power that you've generated. Of that total power that you've generated, some portion has...
Let me ask you certain questions analytically. Isn't it a fact? Let's put aside netting altogether. Let's suppose the... California didn't even allow the utilities to charge for station power. Let's just assume there was no charge for station power, okay? If a generator produced 100 units of energy and needed 5 for station power, how much would be sold in the wholesale market? 95, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that always true, no matter whether it's whatever the netting provisions are under for station power? Isn't that always true?
No, Your Honor, and since the netting interval determines how much of that output actually, can actually be used.
I do not see that. The netting only relates to charges, not the amount of power that's produced.
Let me make sure I understand you. There's sort of two arguments that are being made in the briefs. One argument is sort of the conceptual argument as to how it works, and a separate argument is being made as to how the tariff actually implements it. Let me start with just the first, which I think is your question, and if I'm wrong, you let me know. For purposes of conceptually, the way that the Commission's policy works with the netting is, our submission is the only way that it can work, is that the Commission is making a determination as to when a generator produces 100 megawatts of energy, for example, how much of that megawatts is being held back or being used for purposes of running the facilities, and then what is the residual that is then left for the sale?
No, your brief keeps referring to allocation of power, because you're trying to come within the framework of the Supreme Court case that I can never pronounce, net and whatever it is.
Yes, Your Honor.
I keep thinking of it as Netanyahu, but that can't be. but in any event, you're trying to come within that. But there's no allocation of power here at all. You use that term, but it's not true. When what is involved here is two different netting provisions are possible. One is an hourly, one is a monthly. Monthly is what is done for transmission. Hourly, the state does for station power, right? So that simply means for those 5 units that are going to station power, the cost of that is the retail price rather than your opportunity cost under the monthly arrangement would be wholesale price. Isn't that correct?
No, Your Honor.
Isn't that correct that your opportunity cost for that would be the wholesale price? You following me when I say the opportunity cost? You know what that means?
Yeah, I'm following you on the opportunity cost, but I guess...
You could have sold that in the wholesale market.
At 5, yes, Your Honor.
So your opportunity cost for the 5 is the wholesale price?
Yes, Your Honor.
In fact, you're paying the retail price. So you're paying an additional amount for that 5.
This
is a price question, not an allocation of power.
No, Your Honor. Let me just make two responses to that. One is I think you're wrong, and I'd like to try to convince you why you're wrong. But also, Your Honor, let me just point out that, and we can talk about what this court meant earlier in Edison, but this is the type of factual issue that was presented to the Commission in terms of our argument. And the Commission never addresses this issue to explain it, because we presented very clearly our view of how the world does work in practice, which is what I want to convince you of. But the Commission in its orders never rejects that. And the reason is...
No, I don't think that's true. The commission said, number one, the protocol that's involved doesn't even deal with the sale of power. It deals only with the netting for transmission and the originally the netting for station power. But it never even dealt with the question of the price of the power in the wholesale market.
Your Honor, that's what the commission says in its brief. That's not what it said in its orders below. But also, Your Honor...
That's the way I read the orders below.
But you know, I don't think they explained that, and the reason is because that's not correct. There is definitely, within the tariff that's in applied, there is a true-up mechanism that takes place at the end of each month, and the only way to understand that true-up mechanism is that the tariff is making money get paid or taking money back that otherwise would have been paid for wholesale sales because of the fact that that energy is being used for station power.
Now you're saying the issue is money, not power.
No, Your Honor, I think the two mix up. It's definitely it's a question of rates, because what happens is if the commission says you have your total output is 100, that's how much you're doing. That's your positive generation, and then the negative generation related to station power is 5 less. The commission will only recognize for purposes of compensation the 95 megawatts.
The basic theory is that the commission protocols netting for transmission, which is clearly within the FERC's jurisdiction, because transmission is with it, should govern the netting provision for station power.
But Your Honor,
that is your view.
We're also making the argument, Your Honor, that this applies both for transmission and sales. And what we are saying is that...
Wait a minute. Let me just focus on station power for a moment, okay?
Yes.
Your view is that the original position that FERC had was the correct one, that it should be the same netting provision for transmission as it is for station power.
No, Your Honor, that's not our position. Our position is that the commission has to make a determination as to what a netting interval is for station power. That could be the same as transmission or it could be different, but it's because of its authority to regulate transmission and wholesale sales that it has that authority to set the netting interval for station power. It isn't connected to the charge for transmission or how it nets transmission. It's not directly connected to the question of how it settles.
I'd be perfectly happy if in both cases it was an hourly netting.
Your Honor, we would not be perfectly happy, but
we'd be miserable.
No, but Your Honor, we would.
But it would be consistent.
But Your Honor, we would be happy.
Cost you more money then.
Your Honor, we'd be happy with the jurisdictional answer that the commission has authority to set it for an hour or for a month. We would have a separate argument to the commission as to why the monthly interval is the appropriate interval and why we think an hourly interval is not appropriate, and we could review that for arbitrary capricious review. But you're right, Your Honor, on the jurisdictional question, we would be happy for the commission to make the determination. But our point is that whether it's an hour, 15 minutes, 2 weeks, or a month, that netting interval that gets set for purposes of station power itself determines how much energy is available for both transmission and how much energy is available for wholesale sale. And that
I do not see that this affects the amount of energy at all. All it affects is the price that is paid by the generator for station power.
Your Honor, it's not, because the only way I can explain it is to sort of make two points. One is that, as a factual matter, the way that the markets work is that we know that through this more complicated tariff process, that once, regardless of how the energy is settled for purposes of sales or transmission, what happens through this tariff is that there is a clawback provision that applies depending on how much
station. Clawback is price. It's not power.
But, Your Honor, the price is tied to the amount of power, in the sense that in the first instance you have to know how much power is being available for sale. Otherwise, if the commission says under the netting interval, we know.
Everything that is not used for station power is available for sale for wholesale.
That is right, Your Honor.
So that's it. It's only a question of how much you pay for the station power.
Your Honor, it's not, because you're generating the energy. You're not paying for that energy at all. It's not a sale. It is the traditional utility practice was that portion of the energy, the 100 megawatts that you have produced, the question is how much of that becomes available for wholesale sale. Under the under the if the states are the only ones that get to net this, then the answer is it's the full 100 megawatts, and then the question of station power goes away. If it turns out that the commission has authority to set a netting interval for station power, which everybody agrees that it does, then the question is, okay, how much power do you have left? In the case of a netting interval that results in 5 megawatts of your energy over a period that's being allocated
to... Wait, everybody doesn't agree that FERC has authority to set the netting interval for station power.
Your Honor, they do. Not everybody agrees as to whether that has preemptive effect or whether it's preclusive of state regulation, but everybody agrees.
Well, you said it isn't.
But we disagree on that. We think that...
No, is there a point here to disagree with our prior decision and tee up in bank or cert? Because it seems like our prior decision flatly forecloses the vast majority of your arguments here.
Your Honor, we don't think so, but I mean, I don't want to presume to tell the court how to interpret its decision. I think the way that we interpret the court's decision, particularly in light of how it developed, in Niagara Mohawk, the commission says, here's our policy, and since then, we rely on Niagara Mohawk. But it doesn't provide any explanation for it. The court in the Edison case comes along and says, we haven't provided any explanation for it, relying on that.
It was much more than just saying it wasn't explained. I realize that's in there, and that's in there in a lot of administrative law cases when we've disagreed. But it was much more of a substantive disagreement with what the commission was doing.
Well, Your Honor, I, with respect, I think the correct way to read that decision is that the commission has never addressed the argument that we are specifically making here, and that the court, although it expressed skepticism, and Judge Silberman, you of course know this well, for because of the reasons I think the questions you're asking today as to how this fits together, the commission never explained it, and I thought the court was quite clear that although the explanation that had been provided relating to transmission didn't seem to make sense, and the court was skeptical of that, the court was asking the commission, in its penultimate paragraph, it says very clearly, the commission is concerned about discrimination, but is yet to explain why it can regulate. And what we proposed here in our briefing...
We said the netting periods for power and transmission need not be the same. We said FERC had exceeded its authority by insisting on the same method for calculating transmission charges and retail charges. Those are all preliminary to the part you just wrote.
Well, Your Honor, we agree with that. The netting periods don't have to be the same. But what we're making a separate point is, and this is where I think Judge Silberman and I are having a discussion here, which is that our submission is that this question about the netting that you apply for wholesale sales and you apply for transmission as you settle those markets is a different question.
Right, the wholesale question, is that what you're on now?
Well, Your Honor, but I want to make a distinction because I think Judge Silberman's questions is asking, so when you settle markets for wholesale sales, you settle that on, you know, let's say you settle it on an hourly basis. Is that the same type of decision as to what happens for purposes of netting for station power? The answer is no. The answer is that it's the jurisdictional hook of having authority over wholesale sales and transmission that gives the commission authority to set a netting interval. But it's not the same thing.
Your argument in your brief kept referring to allocation of power.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because that's the Supreme Court case. I do not see that involved at all. It's simply a price question, not an allocation of power.
Respectfully, Your Honor.
Your view is price is allocation of power. Well, now that's too much of an argument. You can't make that.
Well, Your Honor, I recognize that once you determine how much power is out there, then as a result, that determines of how much you get paid. But the prior question is not a question of price. It's a question of how much power is available. If the commission were to say tomorrow there shall be no netting at all, there shall be no station power that you can be entitled to. We'll forget about how the traditional utilities handle this practice and say no netting. We would have 100 megawatts of generation that we generate that would be available for transmission and sale at wholesale, and that would be the end of it. Now, the commission says...
Oh, wait a minute. If you would still be using a certain amount of that power for station power,
and
so therefore you couldn't sell it.
No, Your Honor, that's not true.
Your view is you could sell it twice, you can use it and sell it too?
But Your
That's
Honor,
not what you're saying, is it?
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is that if the commission was to make...
Are you saying that you could use it and sell it too?
No.
So if you use it, you can't sell it, right?
Right, Your Honor. But what I'm saying is if the commission tomorrow was to say that we will not recognize station power self-supply, you may not use it anymore, what would happen is that your total output at that point would be deemed all available for transmission and sale at wholesale, and there would be no station power. You'd have to purchase it all at retail. What the commission instead is allowed to do, and which it has done, is say, no, there's this traditional utility practice that has always been part of the practice. It's not a retail sale. When you self-supply, you're not engaging in purchasing energy from somebody else. You are generating it yourself. We now need to come up with some mechanism. Somebody has to determine how much of that power is actually being held back, how much is being put on the system, and then let whatever else happen to it.
You know, one thing that is, I must say, even though I've written the last opinion, I'm certainly sympathetic to your policy views on competition. And so was FERC. They tried through almost ledger domain to try to help you on this one. Now, how many utilities are still in California? We're talking about California only, right?
Well, we are in this case, Your Honor, but there's lots of other markets.
This is case, please. How many utilities are still involved in generation?
Your Honor, to be honest with you, I don't know. What I do know from...
I don't think there are any left, are there?
Well, Your Honor, there are. In fact, even Edison, to my understanding, has some facilities.
It's infinitesimal. It's insignificant. If that's true, then the competitive problem has gone away, hasn't it?
It has not, Your Honor, for two reasons, but let me explain. One is that in the earlier proceedings, there was a finding made by FERC that there was no evidence that this competitive problem had gone away. Now, that could be challenged, but nobody has ever done that.
I was just curious at this point.
Right.
My understanding was perhaps that's not clear in the record that the utilities are no longer involved in generation.
Your Honor, our position is that there's nothing in the record to establish that, and that they could prove it, but it would be in a FERC proceeding. It doesn't go to jury. And your second point...
But if that were true, then the policy issue would go away.
No, Your Honor, but it would be less of a problem. And the reason is, and FERC recognizes this, is that when the generators purchased their facilities, there were investment decisions made that were based on the idea that this was a traditional utility practice. Under traditional utility practice, it was always the case, both before deregulation and after deregulation, but before complete divestiture, that the utilities would not treat this as retail sales, but they would treat it as a part of the practice of generating wholesale. And what would happen is the commission, just like it determines the amount of output that a qualifying facility does, just like in many other cases, has to determine what sort of output is going, how much energy is actually being counted that can be then available to do other things, sell it wholesale, transmit over the grid. The commission has to make that determination. And what it is doing in this case, Your Honor, is it's making a determination with a netting interval. Our submission in terms of the conflict and what the court did not address in Edison and respectfully the court didn't understand because it wasn't explained, is that once the commission says there's 100 megawatts, everything you produce is going to count, or no, it's only going to be 90 megawatts. Only the 90 megawatts will count. The remaining 10 that you've produced will be counted towards your station power. That becomes an affirmative judgment that the federal government has made about this practice that affects wholesale rates in a very direct and meaningful way. And the states have to respect that. And that is the argument of preemption, why we think it can be linked to the Nantahala line of cases, Your Honor, but also why in this court's earlier Entergy decision.
With respect to the contention that the FERC has never responded to the argument, they did specifically point out that in the PJM case, they specifically said that power that is consumed on site can't be wholesale.
Your Honor, no. With respect, again, what they say in the PJM case is there was an argument there that station power consumption should be completely regulated because it's so part of the practice of wholesale that every instance of station power, whether it's self-supplied or purchased from somebody else, falls within their wholesale jurisdiction. So FERC takes over.
Within their transmission jurisdiction. No. And well, not the wholesale. Haven't they consistently rejected the idea that wholesale sales gives them...
No, Your Honor. What they've consistently rejected is the concept that the idea that all of station power, whether it's from a third party or otherwise, would be subject to their wholesale jurisdiction because it's so integral to the practice of generating energy. They've rejected that point, and instead what they said in their earlier orders was that FERC gets to decide what counts as a sale because we get to, and I know you don't like it, but in a sense we get to determine how much total output is going on in the grid. Our point is that we're making a different argument, which is that because the commission gets to determine how much total output, they don't get to occupy the whole field. They don't get to regulate when it truly is a third-party sale. They've rejected that argument. We agree with that. But once they've made the determination as to how much power is going on the grid and how much is being kept behind for station power, that has the effect.
Who has made that determination?
FERC.
How much is left behind for station
power? The 95.
Power?
In the 90,
exactly, Your Honor.
All right, and that affects, could you finish your sentence?
That does have the effect of preventing the states from setting a different netting interval for purposes of knowing how much station power. So if FERC has said it's 95 and 5 based on our monthly interval, the state can't come along and say, no, no, it's 99 and 1. And because doing that changes the amount of energy. In the example we use in our brief, and I'll change it to the 95-99, but an example we use in our brief, under FERC's rule of setting a 95 with a 5, we can sell and transmit our 95, and the 5, that gets kept behind for station power, and nothing gets done with it. If the state can then come along and set a different netting interval, what happens is it now says, okay, fine, under our view of the world, you actually had 99 to transmit and sell for wholesale energy. We're only going to give you credit 1 for your station power. Therefore, you have to purchase the other 4 through the retail markets. And what happens, and this is why, Your Honor, the Commission was concerned about it and why we are concerned about the competitive effects, is we get slapped on both sides of the head. On one side, we don't get the state's choice. It is a state's choice, but it's directly interfering. And our point is,
how is it directly interfering? It's a state choice that increases the prices, but it's a state choice.
Well, Your Honor, this is our point, that in many different markets, and this is where we think the Nantahala.
It's not an impossibility, is it, to comply with both the state and federal regulation in those?
Except for it operates as a regulatory confiscatory taking. So it's not an impossibility, but it's also results in undue discrimination, which FERC is not supposed to allow to have happen. So that's why we think the question really comes down to the question of, yeah, the state can make the choice, but is that choice preempted? That's why we like the Mississippi Power Nantahala line of cases, because of those cases in Mississippi Power, if you take a look at Justice Marshall's dissent, what he's complaining about there is that because there is a utility that's serving both as a retail purchaser for retail customers plus as a generator, he says, look, the majority has got this all wrong. There are these circumstances that relate to how much a retail serving utility can purchase. That's something that the state should get to resolve. And what the majority says is no, because that's so wrapped up together, you can't have an administrative scheme that will allow actually FERC to do its job if you allow the states to second guess. Where we think the analogy is not on the facts,
our prior decision premised on the idea that the states can second guess?
No, Your Honor. I think your prior decision is premised on the idea that the Commission did not provide any explanation as to why they could, and without a proper explanation that was relied purely on the idea that that Niagara Mohawk had resolved all of this, which it hadn't, that the Commission threw out some vague references to transmission, and they say Niagara Mohawk controls, and this Court comes along and says, we don't understand how transmission works. That doesn't seem to make sense. If we take a look, Judge Sylvan, your questions of transmission, there's different netting intervals. That seems to make all sense. We don't understand. And what we're respectfully submitting to the Court is that we've come forward with an explanation that is different from what the Court addressed, different from what the Commission has offered before, and the Commission at a minimum should have considered that and explained why we were wrong.
All right. Why don't we hear from the Commission, and then we'll give you some time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Robert Kennedy on behalf of the Commission. Judge Silverman, as you noted, the Commission believed that its station power policies were an important tool in leveling the playing field a bit between merchant generators and vertically integrated utilities. And if it believed it could carry that policy forward consistent with this Court's opinion, Southern California Edison, consistent with the tariff governing the California market and consistent with its previous jurisdictional findings made throughout the development of its policies, it would have. But it read the Court's opinion as saying, unless the Commission can affirmatively regulate the procurement of station power, either via self-supply or third-party sale, then its characterization of that transaction can't bind the states, that the states are free to come behind and characterize that transaction as they like. Much of the back and forth when Petitioner was making their case was about how these work, and from the start, how the station power netting period works, what its purpose is, and how wholesale sales are made. And from the very beginning, from back in the PJM orders and throughout the 4 orders that were under review in Southern California Edison, the Commission has made clear that the purpose of the station power netting protocol is simply to assess whether a party has used transmission in connection with its pulls of station power from the grid, and if so, whether it should be charged for that, whether that should be wholesale or retail, whether the charge should be assessed to Edison to pass along as a retail sale or whether it's done at a wholesale rate. I think if you the The output, on the other hand, which is the other part of the equation, I think if you look at paragraph 26 of the commission's remand rehearing order, which is JA-16, the commission notes that throughout this whole case, the petitioner's argument has been that, well, really the station power protocol deems some portion of their output unavailable for sale. And the commission said in paragraph 26, which is JA-16, it said, no, everything you put out on the grid is available for wholesale sales, and those sales are settled on an hourly basis. And it notes that the petitioners acknowledge that fact. I think the issue also came up again there's a bit more fulsome discussion of it in the order issued in June 2005 when the commission reviewed the first station power protocol put forward by California Edison. And there were some arguments raised, and this is at paragraph 56 through 57, JA 178 through 179. There was some argument raised by the California Public Utility Commission that there may be some way for the generators to game the system and produce power when it's cheap for them to do so and take it when it's expensive. And the commission referred to similar arguments made in the PJM decision, where in that case, somewhat similar to what generators are arguing here, the generators in PJM were saying, we don't like this 30-day netting period because, as we think it works, when we generate power, it's when there's high demand, and therefore we get high rates for that power. When we take power from the grid, when we use station power and we're not generating, it's usually at night where it's low cost. So we think the way this netting period works, we think what you're going to do is simply take away, if we used 5 megawatts of station power, which was really low cost because it was at night, we think you're just going to discount 5 of our sales, which were made at higher rates, and we don't think that we think that works to the detriment of the generators. And what PJM and the commission said is, no, these are really two separate transactions. The station power netting has nothing to do with your output. Every megawatt you put on the grid for sale is settled and sold on an hourly basis at whatever the prevailing hourly.
So what do you do with his argument, and which was part of our dialogue, that the commission's order or failure to act allows the state to restrict the amount of power sold in wholesale?
It doesn't.
Explain why.
Well,
the arithmetic analysis in the brief seemed to me incorrect, but I want to hear what you...
Well, using their example, I believe it was a generator who... simply put, their output is settled on an hourly basis, and they're paid for that. What happens later on, at the end of a month, we're going to look back on the station power protocol. We'll look back and say, okay, how much transmission was associated with your taking of station power. We're going to account for the actual value of that station power based on the hourly time period when it was used.
But that's a price factor, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's got nothing to do with the amount of power that's been sent out into the grid.
Correct.
My concern with the petitioner's position is they're conflating price and power.
Correct. The impact of the state being able to contradict the commission's determination that the taking power from the grid is either self-supply or a third-party sale, the state being able to make that determination results in higher costs to merchant generators if they view it a smaller snapshot. Likelihood would be that there would be a third-party sale there and then retail costs. The general rule is if you take a longer view of it, a 30-day,
right,
there's more opportunity to make up, so you will be deemed to have used your own. The fiction to be applied is that really you're using your own, so you're going to be charged lesser rates for that.
So did the commission on remand address this type of undue discrimination argument?
Well, what the commission said in its remand orders was that the court has told us that unless we can affirmatively regulate the procurement of station power, it doesn't matter what we call it, the states aren't bound by it. And really, if there is discrimination, if there is undue preferences being provided in the market, it's through this procurement or providing people station power. We've tried to impose a remedy with netting for transmission and giving the merchant generators, when you self-supply on site, you don't have to pay any transmission charges. We tried to deal with it there, and we also originally tried to deal with it by deeming certain procurements of station power to be self-supplied. But
so the commission on remand read the Edison decision to preclude it, or this is a question, did the commission read the Edison decision to preclude it from, in effect, coming up with an explanation?
Well, I believe what the commission found was that what we're left with is discriminate, to the extent there's discrimination, is with the providing people station power at the retail level.
Yeah.
And the court said, we can't do anything about that. If we can't regulate it ourselves, then we can't do anything about it.
So to do it under transmission.
Yes.
Correct.
And actually, you looked at it originally under wholesale and said we can't get there. Power that's consumed on site ain't for a resale, so it can't be a wholesale.
Correct.
You've said that. You looked at that originally.
Correct.
Then you tried the transmission technique, and that didn't work either because we held that you couldn't conclude it wasn't a station power wasn't a sale for retail purposes because whatever the state wanted to characterize it, that was their business if you couldn't tie it to transmission.
Right, and our thought on transmission.
So it comes back to you, and now the question comes up, well, what about, let's go back to wholesale.
Right.
And the argument is presented to you that this affects wholesale. And your response to that is what?
Well, that it doesn't affect the wholesale output because that's separate transaction measured differently.
Wasn't it even in the protocol?
Correct. The protocol, and we've said this, I know there was some suggestion that this is all post hoc reasoning, but we've said from the get-go that what the station power protocols do is their only purpose is to determine whether there was transmission associated with poles of station power, and if so, whether that's going to be charged directly to the generator or to the utility, so they'll pass along as a retail rate. I would just refer the court to the commission's remand order, the first order, paragraph 3 and 5, I'm sorry, 5 and 7 at JA3, where the commission says, our jurisdiction is over the transmission of station power. The use of a reasonable netting interval is designed to determine when, in fact, such transmission, such station power transmission, has taken place. And that's quoting from an earlier.
To follow up on Judge Rogers' question, to the extent there's a discrimination, or it's because of the states, and there's nothing FERC can do about that, correct?
Correct. It's because of a call that the states are making, and read the court's decision in Southern California Edison, we can submit reasonably as saying unless the commission can say, no, that's our call, we're regulating that, and we haven't taken that position.
Incidentally, are there utilities that are still generating?
I think Edison can speak to that better than I. I believe there are, though.
So
I'm not sure the numbers.
So there's an argument in the California courts that there's, or in the California PUC, that there's discrimination.
Presumably there could be, and I will say I know there are. There's a suggestion in the briefs that the commission should have done more to, putting aside the jurisdictional issues, should have done more to address the impact on generators who have signed up for the station power protocols. And again, Edison can speak this a little better than I, but I understand there are proceedings going on there where the parties are trying to figure out, come to some reasonable resolution as to how to avoid potential double charges for these past periods. And as we noted in our brief, to the extent that doesn't work and there still is some issue, then the generators can come to the commission. But at this point, really, it's a little premature in our view to make any pronouncements as to how those past periods should be treated. Unless there are any further questions, I'll see
you
to the intervener.
May it please the court. I'm Jennifer Key for the intervener, Southern California Edison Company. We've already discussed several varying theories of how FERC might have used its jurisdiction to try and preempt the state. And
Are you generating now too?
Edison continues to own some generators, but I would say that the description of how generators dealt with station power in the past has been incorrect. There never was a monthly netting period. What happens is Edison has sufficient generation or buys sufficient energy in the market to serve its own its retail loads. And the CPUC, the State Commission, has made a decision that Edison doesn't need to send itself a retail bill. Obviously, Edison incurs costs in procuring energy to serve its load, but Edison, as an integrated utility that has an obligation to serve customers, is in a very different position than a merchant generator who isn't regulated by the state. And the state views the cheapest...
Here's an interesting economic point of view. This is a little beyond the case, but insofar as you self-generate, your opportunity cost there is a retail cost, isn't it? Because you would otherwise sell in the retail market with that power.
Well, to the extent...
Or are you selling in the wholesale market?
We'd sell in both. We have to either... Edison does not own sufficient generation to serve its own retail load in virtually any hour, maybe in all hours. It has to make...
So depending on where that energy goes, you don't know at the time you're using it for station power whether it's an opportunity cost at retail or opportunity cost at wholesale.
Correct.
You don't know. But if it's an opportunity cost at wholesale, then you've got a competitive advantage over the generators.
Let's say we'd have a very minute competitive advantage given that station power is a very small cost of the price of electricity. If this theory were correct, let's take coal or natural gas. They're obviously, 10, 15, 100 times more important to the cost of electricity. And obviously different generators, they might be affiliated with a coal company, might be affiliated with a natural gas company. There's a million different advantages and disadvantages. Edison tends to have union labor, and the merchant generators often don't have union labor. Is FERC going to regulate the unions on the grounds of discrimination? Again, FERC can't go beyond.
Not a bad idea.
I do think...
So you're the bad guys here. You're taking this competitive advantage over the generators.
I wouldn't say it's a competitive advantage that rises to the level that needs a remedy. And in fact, you ask, couldn't they go to the State Commission? In fact, this case truly began when Duke Energy Moss Landing went to the State Commission and felt it did not get relief on the matter and then turned to FERC. So there is an avenue of relief if they could prove the discrimination case, and it would be the state.
Yeah, but they argue the state of California is favoring the utilities against the generators because they want to help the consumers.
Well, that's the state's interest is to protect its consumers, and if the state finds that it's perfectly reasonable for those generators like those owned by Southern California Edison that have been built and paid for.
Forgive me, I'm just having fun.
Okay.
What about the point they're making, the fundamental argument petitioners are making, that this is a power allocation rather than a cost question?
The generators presented on their initial brief a power allocation example. It was 100 where they sold 70, consumed 30. Now we've switched that allocation to where they're selling 95 at wholesale and consuming 5, and that 5 is treated as self-supply. And what they would object to is the state considering them having purchased 5 megawatts, sort of not recognizing that self-supply. And our reaction to that hypothetical has always been, well, that's a nice hypothetical, but that's not the truth. That's not the way the market works. FERC, there was no post hoc rationalization. FERC said that's not the way the market works.
So does the market work as he described it in the example of 95.5 and then at the state it's 99.1?
No.
How does the market work?
The market works if you're going to, if
hypothetical, okay. 100.
On the hypothetical 100, how the market actually works is it's an hourly market. We have lots of evidence in the record that it's an hourly market. And let's assume they do consume 1 megawatt in the same hour they're producing. So in that hour one, they're producing 100 megawatts, consuming 99 megawatt hours is sold. There's nothing the state is doing to interfere with that. They're selling that 99 megawatt hours. What Mr. Parrish is saying is at the end of the month, there's this mysterious true-up, clawback. He has many different words for it. But what he says is it has the same effect as if they only got to sell 95 megawatts. Well, when you think about that analogy, that there's something going on, some mechanism that reduces that 99 to 95 megawatts, and you're saying they're offsetting revenues and charges. Well, those charges must be for energy. They're not buying balloons from the CAISO and if they're buying balloons from the CAISO and offsetting the cost of buying balloons from energy.
The answer, the true up at whatever it happens at the end affects the price, but not the number of units sold.
What happens at the end?
Isn't that correct?
Is the true up reflects that they're purchasing energy from the CAISO, and that's a retail purchase. In PJM 2, FERC said, if somebody sells someone energy for consideration, it's a retail sale. That true up he's discussing at the end of the month is a purchase for energy. Otherwise, his whole hypothetical doesn't make sense.
The true up just increases their internal cost. It doesn't affect the amount of energy that's sold.
It does not affect the amount of energy sold.
That's a simple proposition.
It reflects that they're purchasing energy, and that purchase should be state jurisdictional, and is state jurisdictional because it's retail. Thank you.
All right, counsel for petitioners.
Your Honors, I'd like to make 3 points. I'd first like to urge you to take a look at the PGM order. That's in 94 FERC 61251 at 61890. And I'd like to just, if I may, read just a few points, because this is where, unfortunately, I think the court is getting this wrong, and the commission has never supported this idea. This is where the commission first gives its big explanation about how it's approaching station power, and it's explaining the background on it. On 61891, it starts off by using an analogy to how it talks about a QF's net power production capacity, and it talks about how the net output of the facility is subtracted once you take a look at its auxiliary equipment and facility necessary for power generation. It then goes on to say, we emphasize that a generator may net against its gross output as measured over a specific time period, typically 1 hour, and it goes on to explain that this is what utilities already always do. And then on 61892, it says, as we have previously noted, we have never required that net output be measured on a real-time or second-by-second basis, but rather have taken the practical point of view that net output should be measured over a reasonable time period so as to take into account fluctuations in electric production. Your Honor, in the PJM order, what it's talking about here is that station power, as the Commission's brief talks about repeatedly, has always been treated as negative generation. And it's not a question of just price. It's a question of what is your total generation capacity when you take a look at the positive generation, less the negative generation, the power that's available for sale, measured against the power that's been used for your station power requirements. Now, Your Honor, I'm not asking you to decide this here, but
that's never going to change. Not ever anybody's theory. What you use for station power can't be sold. It's that simple.
Right, Your Honor, but how much are we using for station power? We don't know.
My point is, you're saying the state cannot second guess.
Because somebody has.
If FERC has said it's 5, then the state is stuck with 5.
That's and we have. It has. We have to know how much it is. And if the state sets a differing netting interval and saying you're not purchasing 5, you're purchasing for station power, but you're actually using 10 for station power and you need to purchase the rest from retail, that means that there's a different allocation of power that's being put on.
No, it's not allocation of power. That's where I disagree. It's a question of price.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying and I disagree with you, but let me make the second point, because Judge Rogers raised what I think of as the Prill issue, which is that the Edison case did not preclude the commission from reaching these issues. It may have hinted very strongly of where the court was going, but it did not preclude. Now, Your Honor, if you take a look at paragraphs 26 to 27, what the commission actually says in there is that we recognize that the net output figure derived from application of the tariff is utilized to determine transmission-related charges under the tariff, while application of a different state netting interval for retail sales could lead to a different net output calculation. Now, that is part of what we're arguing. And the commission could have addressed that issue because it wasn't resolved by Edison, but instead the only thing that the commission says is, but the court has already determined this issue and has resolved it. I don't think, if you look through the commission's orders, there is anywhere in there where they actually address these factual issues that are being inserted into the case. We think the reading of the tariff is completely wrong, and we explain this in our reply brief. But the problem is, Your Honor, is you have no way of knowing who has the best interpretation of the tariff, because the only explanation that the commission has given has been at a minimum tainted by its view of Edison and the fact that it thought the court had resolved these issues, and it's never squarely addressed it. So with respect, Your Honor, I feel like if this was not an oral argument but we could sit down for coffee, I could explain to you in an hour and you would be convinced. But we can't do that. But that is why it is important that when we take a look at the jurisdictional issue, the way that we have framed it, which we think is correct, that this is a net output calculation, the commission needed to address that. It could have addressed it by saying, as a matter of law, we think you are wrong, that even though it is true that we look at net output, we don't think this has the preclusive effect. We don't think they can come there, and nothing they've said in their brief really addresses that point. Or they could raise a factual defense, Your Honor, which is the facts that you're looking at. We respectfully disagree. We presented this, but nowhere do they discuss this. And we even asked them to hold an evidentiary hearing or to do something that would allow for presentation. And it wasn't like they say, we think you're wrong on the facts. We don't think you've interpreted the tariff right. What they really say is that the court has already resolved this. And you know, my last point here is, and Judge Kavanaugh, you keep coming back to this question about the states. And we agree that it is the case that the states are trying to set the netting interval. But our point is that if you set up the scheme, it's going to crowd out any netting interval by the feds, in the sense that if the states are able to set the netting interval in a way that determines how much of your power gets used for station power, how much has to be purchased, then there's no room for FERC at all. We think that if you apply the statute, that's not how the statute works. The first question is, can FERC regulate? Answer, yes, it can. Second question, is there a conflict such that its jurisdiction is exclusive? We think there's a conflict. That's what we're talking about. But even if we're wrong on all that, that's why the third part of our brief we're right on.
There's no conflict if they're both hourly, in your view.
If they're both,
use hourly netting, there's no conflict.
If they're both the same, there's no conflict. But
even though that is most disadvantageous to you.
No. So, Your Honor, the question that we want to ask is, who has jurisdiction?
No, I understand. But if they were both hourly, you'd be in a much worse position.
No, Your Honor, we would be in a better position. And this is the point about... Well, there's two issues, Your Honor. One is we want the opportunity to argue before the commission that the commission has jurisdiction and it should set the monthly. But number...
Your argument was they have to be the same.
Right.
So if FERC said no on transmission, we're no longer do monthly netting, we'll go back to hourly netting, which, of course, was what was considered on the East Coast. So we go back to hourly netting, now both are the same, you're happy, but it costs you much more money.
Your Honor, let me answer this question in two ways. One is the question is, are we happy as to an hourly netting interval? The answer is no, but if you ask me, would we prefer to have FERC set the interval and for the opportunity to argue, or do you want the states to drive that bus? We want to have the opportunity to argue that FERC has jurisdiction. And, Your Honor, but we also are not better off right now, and here's my point about the third part of the brief. Third part of the brief, which is that if you disagree with us and you think that the states get to control the netting interval and they drive the bus, then what we've asked FERC to do in this proceeding is to get rid of the tariff, because the reason everybody went into the tariff in the first instance, the station power protocol, was so that we could take advantage of being treated on an even playing field. The disadvantage is that tariff includes a special provision that says they can now retroactively charge for things that have happened in the past. And we've asked...
FERC says that's all going on at the state level.
Right. State remedies.
To avoid double charging. That's before the state commission.
But, Your Honor, that's our point is, I mean, they set up the tariff itself. It wasn't the states that did that. So the remedy has to be with FERC, and it has to be in this proceeding if they're going to do it.
The remedy is with the state. I mean, they addressed it in that sense.
But you're only addressed in that sense by not addressing the merits of our argument. The concern we have is the total output. We are still getting this sort of taking of our energy because of the competing, conflicting schemes. At a minimum, if we're not right that the feds get to control that, we want the feds to get out of the way so that we don't start losing.
Can they reserve the possibility of coming back to the feds?
I'm sorry.
Did FERC reserve the possibility of your coming back to FERC later?
They did, except for it doesn't work as a remedy because it's only in this proceeding that they'd have the ability to prevent the retroactive charges because of the limits on FERC's authority. Our understanding is if they move forward, they could only do it on a prospective basis, and what's happened under the tariff to pass can only be addressed at this point in time now. And we lay this out in detail in our brief.
I know, but isn't this within FERC's discretion?
Your Honor, to the extent that it's in FERC's discretion, it can't be within the discretion of the reasons that FERC gave in its brief, in the sense that we said you need to address it now because of these reasons. It's not enough for FERC just to say you can go to the states or we can consider it later, because that doesn't get to the problem that we're addressing. So FERC does have some discretion here, but it only has discretion to consider the issue. Likewise, it may have discretion to think about where its jurisdiction is, but it has to actually address the issue, which is our fundamental complaint, which it's never done.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Take the case under advisement.